Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to this week's Iowa Clinic Men's Center podcast with Jeff Woody. My name's Chris Williams. Pardon me, I don't have much of a voice left, Jeffrey, so I'm going to...
He was too busy using the vocal cords to scream at the NASCAR officials for not letting Dale Earnhardt continue in the chase.
There's some truth to that. Yeah.
What is that? Like, why?
I don't know.
Why did they finish? Was it green?
You know, honestly, dude, I'm a NASCAR fanatic, and I have no time. This is how little time I have. I didn't even watch the race. I don't really know. I just know that there was some sort of a controversy.
I thought he was in the process of passing someone, and they waved the green white checker to finish.
Yeah.
And he was like, literally like half a second away from closing off.
Yeah, something like that.
And he would have, in order for him to stay in the chase, he would have had to win the race. He was in the process of passing to get the first. They waved the green-white checker. He is like a nose behind, Logano, whoever it was, and ends the race. He finishes in second place.
This is the first time in my career where somebody else brought up NASCAR.
Well, it's the only thing that happened this week.
So, Todd Sturdy, what do you know about Todd Sturdy, Jeff?
I love me some Todd Sturdy.
You're a big Todd Sturdy
fan. I love me some Todd Sturdy. He's a guy, like, this is the most Todd Sturdy story. And hopefully, Lenz and Coleman listen to this podcast. I don't know if they do or not.
Well, everybody listens to this podcast. So, yeah, I would assume that.
Everyone.
Yeah.
Well, so hopefully, I don't remember if it was Lenz or Coleman or somebody else, but somebody's, like, in practice, we're on Major's practice field, the Johnny Major's practice field. And somebody had like scored a touchdown, and one of his other receivers, because he was coaching wide receivers at the time, one of the other receivers was blocking downfield for him the entire way that person was scoring. So Sturdy was just going. He was like, he's a super enthusiastic guy, and he always wants to. He's like a big positive reinforcement guy, and he started taking off from his spot on the sidelines where he was at. And dead sprinting, like four steps in, strains his calf muscle and goes down like he got sniped from the top of Jack Trice. And then he gets up and like hobbles his way still to get down there as the trainers are like coming to help him. So like he injured himself for the betterment of celebrating with somebody else. And like that's the most quintessential Todd Sturdy thing. Like he's a guy that's going to go completely out of his way for the players. There's not a person, you can't ask a player, hey, even off the record, like, hey, do you like Sturdy? No one is going to say no. He's a guy that sacrifices his time for guys if they need it. His energy, everything is to be positive towards the guys. The other thing that I like about him is he is a very smart guy who's been proven at the Division I level. Like, at Wazoo, he had one of the top, 32 offense, something like that, when he was being the coordinator. And at Wazoo, it was more of a passing offense. It was more of throw first. But he's also got the ability to understand that what do we have and what do we not have. So, like, he's not going to try and, square peg round hole, like I said on Monday. He's a guy that's going to say, what do we have? What is this group good at? And we're going to do what this group is good at. It's sort of like Fred does with his not totally putting him in the same category, but sort of like Fred does with his basketball team, where we go, okay, we got a bunch of three-point shooters. Mm-hmm. We're going to shoot a bunch of threes. Okay, maybe our three-point shooters aren't quite as good this year, so we're going to run everything through the post and then get dribble drive penetration off of it. Something like that, where it's not going to be doing what the coach wants to do because the coach wants to do it. He's going to do what the offense wants to do because that's what the players fit. So he's a square peg, square hole guy, and he's super positive with the team. So the other thing, the final thing I'll say about him now is, you know how Wally will, my wife and I call him the Wally Wrangler, where like he has to have somebody like pull him off the field.
Oh yeah, every game.
He's got the Wally Wrangler.
It doesn't matter what the score is.
Watch for it. If you guys are watching on TV, and you probably have already noticed it, but watch the Wally Wrangler. It's a strength coach, and he has to literally grab Wally by the belt and pull him back off the field. But the other thing that Wally does really well is he did it on Saturday, where the sideline reporter mentioned that he was doing this, and he did this all the time, is he didn't like the way the look and the attitude of the players was, even on a good drive. Like, they forced a punt.
Yeah.
But he didn't like the way, like, the look in their eye. He didn't like the attitude that they had. And he, Wally stopped it right there and got it turned back to where it needed to be. So he's not a guy that's going to be, like, complacent and just letting stuff go. And that's the thing with Sturdy, is he's not going to – he's a guy that – he's super positive, but he will get you back on track. He's not going to let, you know, the sheep go too far astray as far as not going all in the same direction. So he's a really good motivator. He's a smart guy. I mean, you can attest to this. When they hired Mangino, it's a cool they hired Mark Mangino, but I thought Sturdy should have got the job.
Yeah, and you said that. I mean, I remember you were very much in the Todd Sturdy corner.
But I understand.
You weren't anti-Mangino.
Right.
But I remember talking to you. You're like, you know, Sturdy would be a really good hire too.
Yeah, I think he got kind of screwed by the ineffectiveness that Coach Messingham had when we were there. And I was on that offense, so like I can say that we weren't as good as we could have been, because Messingham was an internal hire and that didn't turn out great. And then you turn around and do another internal hire and the fan base would have been super pissed.
PR-wise.
Yeah, it was the right move to get Mangino, but I think Sturdy was more it was a better fit for Iowa State than Mangino was.
Well, yeah.
I mean, obviously, retrospectively.
Hindsight, yeah. We can look back and we can say that. So Joel's getting the start. We know that at quarterback. He looked really good on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I mean, against a Baylor defense that probably – they're not great, Jeff, but I think they're always underrated no matter how good they are based off of their offense. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think people automatically just think Baylor offense, they don't give the defense enough credit. They're a more physical team this year, but they were without Billings. Mm-hmm. I think that's important to point out. But okay, in your expertise, how does Iowa State's offense look different on Saturday against Texas?
As opposed to Baylor game?
Well, just as opposed to how does a Sturdy offense look different than a Mangino offense?
It doesn't look much. Doesn't look much different than what it did in the second half. Because, like I said, he's not a guy that has it in him to be, I'm right, you're wrong all the time. Where he's a very reasonable guy, where he was a special teams coordinator when Jarvis West was there, and Jarvis was the return of punts and kickoffs for touchdowns all over the place. Sturdy was the coordinator with that group. And prior to that, we didn't have a kick return touchdown outside of Jeremy Reeves. And so Sturdy actually totally revamped the kick unit, because we didn't have – so the kick return unit was – kick return and punt were Sturdy.
Yeah.
So the punt unit that Kirby was on his junior and senior year, and the kick return unit my junior and senior year were Sturdy. And with Sturdy, we totally revamped the kick return unit, because we didn't have a lot of guys – not that we weren't physical, but because I'll put myself in that group. I really didn't like on kick return – the back four guy, like there's the kick returners, then there's the four guys that are right in front of them, and then there's the five guys in the front line.
Yeah.
Always the five guys in the front line had a better job than the four guys in the middle, because the five guys in the front line got to run backwards, and as the guys covering, they didn't have to like sit their feet in the ground and like try and butt up against them. They just ran them past where the returner was, and the returner ran the other direction. So like the guys in the middle had to put their, prior to Sturdy revamping the system, is that the guys in the middle had to like put their feet in the ground and like headbutt a guy running 35 yards down the field at full speed and try and divert them off course. And there are only a certain few guys that are physical and big enough to do that at Iowa State, but there's a bunch of really smart walk-ons. So if really smart walk-ons understand leverage. So what he did is he took those four guys in the middle, and instead of having them butt up against somebody, because it's not what we had, we don't have, you know, five-star linebacker freshmen that are just, you know, all Jeremiah Georges. Like, if you had a bunch of Jeremiah Georges, yeah, you tell everyone to hit right away, right now. But you don't have a bunch of Jeremiah Georges. So what he did is, just to emphasize this whole square peg, square hole thing, is he took those smart walk-ons, moved them up the field a little bit, as opposed to being on the 20 and 25-yard line. They were on, like, the 30 and the 35. And then instead of dropping back and putting your feet in the ground to try and headbutt somebody in a true, like, blitz pickup style block, mm-hmm. you ran backwards a couple yards, invited someone, like where you stood, you kind of invited them to take a certain direction away from you, and then you ran them by the return.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't have to like sit down and like bow your neck to try and hit somebody. You ran them past the return. And for a time there, we were, I think, a top 25 kick return team. Because Jarvis was Jarvis House, the one against Texas
Tech. I do remember that, yeah.
And that was totally redone because Sturdy saw it. Kansas State was the team that ran that, like the model for what he did to do that return. It's kind of different than what Kansas State did. So like, but that was like the base for what he based it off of.
Yeah.
But square peg, square hole, we don't have a bunch of really big physical guys that aren't already playing to play special teams. We have a bunch of really smart, pretty quick walk-ons. And freshmen, sophomore that don't like to do this. So what his idea was to take this kick return unit and totally morph it. So to get back to the offense, I think we all saw, and I mean, I'm not going to take credit for it because every guy that played football knows what that offense should have been, which is what it was in the second half of Baylor. And that's the way the offense wants to be. Like, that's the way the personnel is set up.
Yeah.
That's the way the offensive line run blocks, doesn't pass block, great. So what do you want to do? Run. The quarterback, whether it's Sam or Joel, they both run pretty well. So run. You have two pretty good running backs, because I think Josh Thomas is starting to pick it up.
Dude, he looked like a different guy the last couple weeks.
It's clicking.
Yeah.
That's what happened with Mike against Toledo, where he's starting to get it, and he's not thinking as much, and he's just reacting.
Yeah.
Which is nuts, because this is his seventh college football game. Seventh week of seeing a college football game, and that's Josh Thomas.
He looks like he's twice as fast as he was.
Because he's not thinking. Yeah, you're not thinking, oh, what do I have to do? What do I have to do? What do I have to look for? What am I doing? It's just, I know what my read is, and then from my read, I'm playing football. So anyway, then you have big wide receivers that are really good against one-on-one coverage. So running the ball is going to pull safeties in, so you can't play double coverage over somebody. So you get one-on-one matchups that you can get off play action, and you have matchups with Bundridge, DeVario, Allen. You have guy matchups there. So that offense wants to be like this. And you've bashed me for being like a homer for running the football. But
well, you are.
But I am. But
I'm not bashing you. I'm just pointing out.
In the second half, Iowa State ran 43 run plays and 17 pass plays.
Yeah.
And
you're right.
Yeah. And that's the way the offense wants to be. So Sturdy, at just like the kick return, square peg, square hole, what does this group do well? What does this group not do well? Let's do what they do well and not do what they don't do well, because I'm not too stubborn to say I can't.
Yeah. No, that's it'll be interesting. I guess what I'm curious about, too, is the aspect of Joel Lanning getting this first start. There's really no tape on him running the show other than last
one half.
There's one half, but there's a new coordinator now, right?
Yeah.
So, like, to me, like, this is a precarious situation for Texas to be in.
And one of their defensive tackles made the stupid mistake
of
insulting a team that you do have more talent than. But you never give them more motivation.
Why do you guys continue to do that?
Because people are stupid. Like, I guarantee that is not a guy who is a high academic standing guy.
For those who don't know,
it's a dumb comment.
What exactly happened for those who were breaking
this? So, Paul Boyette, I think, is his name. It's amazing that I remember a defensive tackle for Texas' name because he said this thing. Paul Boyette basically signed the fact that he's going to get crackback blocks all over the place by saying on the press conference that, like Iowa State has on Mondays, Texas has the media availability. And he said, quote, "Iowa State is not a very good team." And then said something the effect of,
okay.
Ironically said something the effect of, they could come out one week and look really good and then the next week be flat. Like, totally ironic, because Texas is the most inconsistent team in the conference.
Yeah, they lost to TCU by 43 and then beat Oklahoma the next week.
They gave up 37 points in a half to TCU and then held Oklahoma to 24 in a game.
Yeah.
So the model of consistency called another team inconsistent.
Yes.
So pot meet kettle.
Yeah, exactly.
But this guy, basically found a way that he's going to get a helmet to the ear.
Saw some response by the Cyclones on Twitter.
Love it. I would have done the same thing. Like,
yeah, they were a little...
Jordan Harris had the best.
What did he say?
He said something to the effect of, like, you can talk all you want during the week, but you got to show up on Saturday.
Yeah.
But, you know, I totally... Like, a guy that says that is one of two things. either he's Warren Sapp and he's unblockable. Well, Warren Sapp's kind of dumb too, but he's either Warren Sapp and he's unblockable and he can say that, or he's just kind of stupid. And I'm going to go with just kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Just my opinion. But anyway.
So, well, it's just never good. It's never a good idea.
No, I'm sure Charlie loved it.
No matter who your opponent is, just say, yeah, they're a good team. You know, I don't know why that's so, that's not.
We said, look at what Iowa State said about Kansas.
Yeah.
Like, I guarantee as soon as the microphones went down, they're like,
we just lied to everybody.
In the you know, off-the-record portion where the reporters put their mics down, put their recorders in their pockets and stuff like that. And I guarantee you that, you know, someone like Randy would be like, is Kansas really that good? And someone, whoever's answering the question, goes, no, they're pretty terrible. Like, I guarantee that's how it went. But you never say that publicly, that another team is not a good team, because then they want to hurt you.
Yeah.
Like, you personally. They want to hurt you.
Which I, as if Iowa State didn't need more of a chip on its shoulder. I guess I feel that about being around the guys. Even Rhodes, I kind of got a sense on Monday. It's kind of like their last stand.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I feel like there is a certain level of unity. You know the Lazard tweet after?
Yeah.
After the Baylor game,
mm-hmm.
about, like, you know, screw you guys, who I'm paraphrasing, obviously. He didn't say that. But, like, we're sticking
with our – that's what he wanted to say.
We're sticking with our coaches. We're a brotherhood. Like, I've seen a ton of stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm just getting –
us against,
like,
the world.
I'm sensing that. I haven't sensed that all year. But this week, now the Mangino news.
Yeah.
Do you sense it as well?
Oh, yeah. 100%. 100% us against the world. You know what? And I'm going to say this, and I might get feedback from – the Cyclone Fanatic faithful.
That's okay. That means they're listening.
The fact of him doing, Coach Rhode doing all this upheaval in one day, this Texas game is, like, critical for him and his job.
Absolutely.
Because if he, and it's not going to be like, this weekend is not going to be the same, like, from TCU to this week, the Baylor game, like, his job status didn't really change. You know, like, yeah. it didn't get any better or worse for him to keep it, like, for the attitude for him to keep his job. I don't know what Pollard's thinking, so it doesn't matter what we think. But the fact that if you do all this upheaval and then you go out on against Texas at homecoming and you beat them by 17 or something like that, then that gives Coach a huge boost to return next year, because if you're capable of doing that, once you have the proper pieces in place, yes, it took a long time for you to get there, but with the proper pieces and you beat the hell out of Texas, and then the next week is Oklahoma, I don't know who's next week. I'm only looking at Texas.
Yeah, it's at, well,
is it at,
yeah,
OU?
At OU, and then it's Oklahoma State, and then at Kansas State, and then we round out the season.
At West Virginia.
I believe so, yeah.
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 Well, anyway, so say...
West Virginia, yeah, because that's Thanksgiving.
Say you beat the hell out of Texas, and they're running this offense, this landing offense. That offense is going to keep you in a game against Oklahoma. And say you stay in the game against Oklahoma and lose by 3, and then you come out and beat Oklahoma State or something like that.
It is... Why didn't they fire Mangino after Toledo?
I mean, because he's Mark Mangino.
Yeah, I know you don't know the answer to that, but, like, that's... To me, like, if I'm a fan listening to this right now, that's what... Because I truly think, like, what you just said is 100% true. That type of offense. I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum, man. Either here or on KXNO. That's what's going to keep you in.
You
got
to play Snyder ball.
You do.
This is Snyder ball. Colin or Joel Lanning is playing the role of Colin Klein. That is exactly what he's doing. He's a better passer than Colin. Passer than Colin Klein.
Who was Colin Klein's running back?
He's a little short dude.
Yeah, Hubert.
Hubert.
Yeah, yep. He was pretty good. I was going to say
he was like 5'6".
I was going to say I think Iowa State has a better running back than Klein ever had, but Hubert was pretty good, though.
Hubert was pretty good. The thing that made that offense go is that Colin Klein was the smartest, most patient runner I've ever seen.
Yeah, that guy would wait till the absolute last second to follow his block and just
And then
go.
Squirt through, and it's 9 yards without him being touched. And then if he breaks a tackle with his, you know, 6'4", 220 frame,
yeah,
all of a sudden he slips through. And he's gone. He's out the door for 25 yards. He was a pretty bad passer. He's like Taylor Martinez passing, but he ran.
Well, that's a blast from the past.
Ran and read things really well.
Remember when the Taylor Martinez transfer to Iowa State rumors?
Oh,
were
man,
hot?
That was great. That was in the Steele Jancy years too.
Yeah, I've heard that there were, not on Iowa State's part, but from the Martinez camp, there were legs to that.
Like, legit?
Like that, yeah, because his dad played at Iowa State, right?
I think so. Yeah, I thought that we in recruiting had a shot.
Well, yeah.
Because of that.
I had heard, like, right after the blow-up between Pelini and Martinez, that old Papa Martinez.
You're going to play for the Cyclones.
Yeah, but it never came to fruition because they figured it out over there, and Iowa State was like, no, we're not tampering.
We've got Jared Barnett.
Well, no, it wasn't even that. It was like, we're in the middle of the season. We're not. I don't think it ever became like an official thing. I just heard like underground stories.
Yeah. I don't know anything about like the actual legitimacy to those.
But do you remember?
I heard them.
Okay, so we're clearly somewhat on the same page.
Yeah, no, I definitely remember hearing them like in the locker room. Somebody from that. Where was Martinez from? Like what, Texas? Is he Texas kid?
I have no idea.
Whatever home state he was from.
That's how seriously I've taken everything. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know anything about it.
We had a guy who was from his home state and said something like, oh, yeah, Martinez is going to come play for Iowa State. Like with a legitimacy to it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he's gonna transfer.
Do you remember that, though? Like the heat between Pelini and him on
There's
the sidelines?
Between Pelini and everybody.
Yeah, that's Bo Pelini. Speaking of that, there's a blog that came out yesterday. I don't know if you read this on Sports Illustrated. Pete Thamel.
He's Tamil? One.
TH.
Thomas is a TH. Tamil?
No, it's Thamel is how
Thamel.
That's how I always pronounce it. I don't know. But he went through all the jobs that are open and all the jobs that he like thought could come open. Right now, he has Iowa State at a 90% chance
that it comes open,
which I think is too high.
I think it depends. If Iowa State goes out this week and Texas just beats the hell out
then
of Iowa State,
then it's very accurate.
Then it's 90% is legit. But if Iowa State wins, I think that number's kind of lessened quite a bit.
I would say I think it's high, but I mean I would say at this point I'm like 75 where I would put it, just because there's a lot of football left to be played, nothing more. But basically, what he goes through and he lists like potential candidates for all the openings and the ones he thinks are going to be open, et cetera. And he makes the point to single out Purdue and Iowa State, saying there's so many jobs open this year, you may actually be better off to wait a year before.
So that's what I heard. I heard about that
making
article,
a move, yeah.
Which makes sense. Now it's just a matter of
can you sell it to the fan base?
Yeah,
like if they go 2-10, you can't sell it to the fan base.
No. But if they win 3 out of 5 and finish at 5-7, winning 3 out of 5 in the final part of the season with Joel Lanning, redshirt sophomore quarterback, redshirt freshman running back, true freshman running back, most of your offensive line coming back.
If they finish 3 out of 5, Rhodes will be back.
I think so too. Because in order for that to have happened, Joel would have had to play well.
Yes. But if and the whole defense basically comes back next year.
Except Dale.
Yeah. And Trent Taylor, but he hasn't really done anything.
No, Trent hasn't really done anything. Are there any other seniors? Because Luke's a junior, right?
Yeah.
Redshirt junior.
You've got Cotton. He's a reserve guy.
Darian Cotton. Sam Rich.
Yeah, but he hasn't done anything this year.
Little Sam. But Wilson, Peavy come back.
Yeah, Peavy's only a freshman. Tribune.
Kawan Floyd, he's gone.
Dude, he's the most underrated player on that team.
Yeah, he is.
I think.
He is.
Both sides of the ball.
You can tell, like, when Kamari, Cotton Moya to Darian Cotton, that transition is a little bit different because they play both physical positions. But when you get, because Darian Cotton is like the sub in for both of them. But when Kawan was out and Darian Cotton was in against Iowa, that matchup they picked on the whole time. Every single time Kawan Floyd was out there, they would run the ball more. Every single time Darian Cotton was out there, they threw one-on-one coverage Vandenberg to Cotton. Because yeah. Kawan Floyd is a very good cover, free safety. Really good player.
Yeah. Floyd, he'll be missed.
Yeah.
He'll be missed.
So safeties are – one safety is gone.
Dude, that sucks about – here's a bold prediction.
What is the injury to Kamari?
It's a hamstring.
Tear?
I don't know.
Or pull?
Well, I'll say this. If he's out for the year, that will lose Iowa State a game.
At some point somewhere.
I hope I'm wrong, but you know what it reminds me of, though, is like you guys against West Virginia in 2012.
With Jake?
Yeah.
Darrell Givens.
And the corner. Who was the corner? The kid who missed the first game. He was suspended the first game. You were missing three key pieces on defense.
Jansen.
If you had, in my opinion, if you had Jansen Watson, Jake Knott, or Darrell Givens in that game, you win.
It's true.
You win with one of them.
Because the play that allowed them to get the lead was a sweep to the side of AJ playing out of position because he was covering for Jake. Gage Schaefer was the corner, and then there was a backup corner to that side, and Tavon Austin got the edge. Granted, Tavon Austin.
Gage Schaefer really struggled. They picked on him all day. Poor kid.
Poor Gage.
Yeah, that wasn't his fault.
And then I will take blame for the next portion
of
that.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna.
No, it's totally. I own that.
I wasn't gonna rub it in. But I truly believe if you have one of those guys, you win that game. And Cotton Moya, man, he's so good. You don't even realize he's out there half the time. There will be a game where a big play happens that would not have happened if Cotton Moya is out there, and that's going to be the difference.
In order for him to already be deemed out.
Likely out.
Likely. Nobody's, for the rest of the year. I mean, it has to be like a partial tear.
Nobody.
Hamstring.
Although Paul said he was encouraged yesterday. He said it's still a long shot, but he was encouraged. Because I guess
for
he's.
Saturday?
No, just for that he'll
for
play
the season.
Again this
and what
season.
Was Allen's deal?
Shoulder, rotator cuff.
Just bruise?
I don't know. Or a strain, or I have no idea. But it sounds like he's going to play now.
Well, that's good. Because Allen's a dude that can match up. Personnel to personnel. Actually, all three wide receivers can match up personnel to personnel with Texas.
Yeah.
100% honest.
I would agree.
Quentin Bundridge, we've seen it, can match up personnel to personnel. Like, I'm going to beat you one-on-one. They can do that to Texas. Where guys like, I think Juwan Wesley's starting to come into that category a little bit. He's starting to get it, which is nice.
Yeah.
But a true slot receiver.
He looks really good.
Mm-hmm. He's a Jarvis. Not quite as Jarvis-y as Jarvis, but...
He does some things better than Jarvis, too. He's not as quick.
No. No one is.
But he seems more productive in the passing game, though. He just does.
It also helps that you have Allen and Q and DeVario on the outside.
Yeah, it'd be nice to throw Jarvis into that mix.
Yeah. That'd be crazy. Give Jarvis... Because think about that. Running four wide, and you have Allen and Q on the outside... And DeVario on the slot to Quentin's side and Jarvis on the slot towards Allen's side. You can't put four corners out there because then you run the ball. So, like, you got to cover him with a safety or a linebacker one-on-one. Like, you can cover Jarvis West with a strong safety one-on-one. No chance.
Yeah.
It'd be great. I would love to see that. Phenomenal. It's by Jim Rome.
I don't listen to Rome anymore.
I don't either.
Bill Snyder, it sounds like he might be out, too. That's another deal. That was another thing I wanted to hit on.
He's going
to
go out on his own terms, though.
Well, I know, but it sounds like he may be ready to retire. The issue they're going to have...
Baby Snyder.
He wants little Snyder, who's 46. It's not like he's Kendall Briles.
Kendall Briles looks like he's 18.
He's, what, 28? He's got that, like, Bieber haircut.
He does. He looks like he's 18.
Somebody
had a great tweet on Saturday that I said something about, like, how I tweeted something about how Baylor's offense, like, executes.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, it's like, treat it like a video game. And then they, like, showed a picture of Kendall Briles, like, on the broadcast, and that same person tweeted back and goes, no, he definitely thinks he's playing a video game because his 14-year-old son is calling the plays.
That's funny. No,
solid tweet, whoever that was.
What's going to happen, though, is that Snyder wants his kid to run the show, but nobody else does. And the issue they're running into, this is based off stuff I've read. This is no like inside info. I mean, it's called Bill Snyder Family Stadium, for God's sake.
And it's not just Bill Snyder. It's Bill Snyder Family Stadium.
So the problem they're running into is if they say, no, we're not going to hire your kid, they're worried that the vampire is going to cease and desist all connections with Kansas State football.
That's a tough position to be in.
Yeah, like, what do you do?
You have to reason that out with Bill.
But, I mean, you know a lot of football coaches at that level. They're stubborn, egotistical.
I don't think Snyder falls into egotistical category.
I don't know if he is or not.
He falls 100% squarely into stubborn.
And loyalty is a big deal with him.
Yeah.
So I feel like he might think he's owed to be able to name his replacement.
Well, who took over for him when he retired?
Rob Prince.
Yeah. So
it was a debacle.
That's when you say, as Bill Snyder, see what happened when you got to pick the person? See what happened?
Yeah.
I had to come back and fix your mess.
Which he did very well.
He did.
Won a couple Big 12 championships.
Running a guy, that Heisman runner-up.
They're not very good.
This year?
Yeah. New. They're not very good.
It also hurts when your starting quarterback goes down and you're already thin.
I get it.
And your starting quarterback goes down the first drive of the first game.
They're not very good.
No.
Across the board. I mean, they're just not. I've watched them enough times now where I truly believe that. Okay, so you've got that issue. And then Baylor. So you kind of tipped me off to this on Monday night we were chatting. Where I still believe this, Baylor will not be in the college football playoff now. I don't believe that a freshman quarterback can come in to the teeth of the Big 12 schedule. If this kid's coming in 3 weeks ago, it's a different story. Now he's got his first game's going to be at Kansas State on a Thursday night.
That's TCU, isn't it? Or did they play Thursday?
No, Thursday is TCU West Virginia, and then Baylor's got a bye now.
Oh, okay.
And then they're at Kansas State. But this kid who is replacing Seth Russell is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
He's like the best recruit they've ever signed.
The sarcastic comment that I made to you that you were referencing on Monday is you and Ross were talking about, like, man, this Baylor's done. They're not making the playoff. And I go, if only we had an example of a team with a backup quarterback as an unproven underclassman that did something in the playoff. If only we have that example.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, you're right.
I'm not totally willing to throw Baylor under the bus because, like, I checked the stats of, like, when he has played. Granted, it's been totally in garbage time, but I checked the stats on how, like, he plays. He has 83% completion percentage, 6 touchdowns, no interceptions.
The difference is, though, like, Ohio State was playing, like, Indiana and...
Well, he only had one game before the Big Ten championship.
I'm sorry, you're right. I was thinking more of the JT Barrett. I forgot it happened twice.
JT Barrett goes down, and then Cardell comes in. So, like, Ohio State filled in 1-1-1, and we've seen that Cardell isn't as good as we thought, but the fact that he is explosive as an underclassman.
Can this kid win at TCU?
I don't know. That's the game that, like, it looked good for TCU now because TCU is the only team in the country that can go Baylor to Baylor with Baylor.
Yeah.
Like, they can match them point for point. It's the only team in the country that can do that. But the thing with Baylor, the reason why I think they're going to be okay, and granted, he has Kansas State to warm up to. Like, Kansas State, like you said, is not that good.
They're not that good.
So it's not like playing against your first game being in Norman. So the reason why I think this is okay is because there's three components that you need for that offense to be successful. One, you need a big running back, a big running that's good in the open field. Shaq Linwood, check. Two, you need, or there's four components, excuse me. Two, you need big offensive linemen, not necessarily even that good. They have good big offensive linemen, so check. They've got that. So you can run the ball effectively because if you either watched the show that I had on ABC on Saturday or listened to anything I talked about before, Baylor blocks the perimeter players, the corners and the safeties by alignment. When they're running the ball or something like that, they just put their wide receivers all the way to the sideline, and then you have to cover them because of the third component. You have to have really fast wide receivers. So because you have those three things, the only piece you need to make that whole wheel go is with that big runner, or that quick, good, big running back, your huge offensive lineman, and super fast wide receivers, is you need a quarterback that can throw the deep ball.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the quarterback can't throw the deep ball, the threat of the speedy wide receivers goes away.
Well, this kid can, right?
And this kid can. Yeah. So he's got a really good deep ball, which is why the entire offense can still move as it needs to. Because Corey Coleman, you throw it anywhere within 5 yards of Corey Coleman, he can come down with that ball. So if you're able to put that ball on the money, then the corners still have to respect the speed of the wide receivers because the deep ball is still a threat. If the corners still have to respect the speed of the wide receivers, you can block them with alignment and your running game is still open. So from there, yes, Stidham's going to have to make good reads in the run game, but you outnumber in the box with the deep ball, you are going to outnumber the defense in the box. So the fact that Seth Russell is injured it does take a hit, because I don't know what like the motivational aspect of having a senior quarterback is at Baylor, but I think they're going to be fine because Stidham does throw a good deep ball. Now, the one thing that will potentially get them in trouble is in a situation like on Saturday when they need to score, but they've been out of rhythm. Mm-hmm. Can he get them back on rhythm? Because, like, you know, I use the example of Grinnell basketball, but I mean, for more of a realistic setup, like, think of Iowa State. Like, when Iowa State was in, I don't know what year, whether it was 2012 or 2013, they had their biggest point outputs of the season. And the way you stopped that offense is either you didn't try and answer them point for point because you couldn't, but the way you would answer them is you would set up like a methodical offense to get the ball into the block and then get a layup. And even if they ran down the court and hucked a three and made it, that rhythm happened. So even if you're running your offense and it's not working, you call a timeout, you force them to sit down, you force them to lose that little bit of muscle memory that they're using to get in that zone, and all of a sudden they get out of rhythm, they're not making threes as much as they want, and you slow that offense down. Same thing with an opposing defense or opposing offense is if you can keep them off the field, you get them off rhythm. Can he get them back on rhythm? Yeah. I think they're going to be fine because the kid's legit, but that's the one thing that I'm worried that does not necessarily worry me, but I'm waiting to see is can he get them back in rhythm when they are out of rhythm?
Especially on the road.
You got to go to Norman. You got to go to Fort Worth. They have to go to Norman, don't they?
Oklahoma comes to them, but they've got to go to TCU.
Do they have to go to Stillwater? Okay.
Which will be really tricky.
Yeah.
I don't know what to think about Oklahoma State. I know that you're not very high on them still.
I'm still not high on them.
They're like Baylor. Their schedule's backloaded, so yeah. It's really difficult to really gauge what kind of a team that is.
And when you have to go week after week of playing really good team after playing a really good team after playing a really good team, your execution starts to get tested.
Yeah.
Can you continue to execute when you're super fatigued? Yeah. Like, that's my thing with Oklahoma State is can they continue to do it? I'm not saying they can't. I'm just not going to put my chips on the table for Oklahoma State. I'd put my chips on the table for TCU because I know that Javon Boykin's going to execute. Their defense, not so much. But I would that's basically what I mean is that I'm not totally off the board with Oklahoma State. I'm just not buying them yet.
That's fair. And this week's a good test for them. They've got to go to Texas Tech.
Mm-hmm.
They're only like a 2.5-point favorite.
Yeah.
That's a tricky game,
and
man.
And Patty Mahomes starting to get a little bit healthier.
Yeah.
Even though they just got shellacked by Oklahoma.
Yeah, and it wasn't even...
They got waxed,
man.
It was
never a game.
No. Well, it was a game in like the middle of the first quarter.
Yeah. So was Kansas State, Oklahoma. At one point. All right, so do you think Iowa State will beat Texas?
I do. I do for the reason of this brand spanking new offense.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to...
I hope you're right. I won't go there just because I don't trust them yet. But I'm like... Fanatics, before we recorded, Jeff and I were just kind of having this conversation. And I was like, I just don't trust them yet. And you put it very well where I'm kind of like standing on a cliff waiting for them to push me off. But they're going to have to push me first.
Right. So I think with me, I'm in the same boat as you are, but I'm like willingly like putting 1 foot off the cliff.
Yeah, you're ready to go.
I'm 1 foot off the cliff. I'm not quite totally ready to dive yet, but yeah. I'm more willing than you are. For the reason of there's no film on Joel. The only thing they've seen on Joel is the second half of Baylor when Baylor's pretty much checked out. I mean, I take that back. I don't think Baylor was 100% checked out at that time. I think the Baylor game went, we're up 35-7. They then checked out. Joel brings them back into the game. And after you take your foot off the pedal, it's hard to put your foot back on the pedal.
Yeah.
So they started efforting again in the middle of the second half.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't the same effort. So they did pull off. Like the third quarter, they were being lazy. And they started to have to – Iowa State put pressure on them. And they tried to get their foot back on the gas towards the fourth quarter. But – I think there's no film on Joel. The only thing they have is that like 12 or 18 or 25, whatever, how many plays he's run with that quick motion. But Sam Richardson's on the field, so it's not the whole offense. And then you get the second half of Baylor where they run a lot of quarterback reads and stuff like that. Well, if they're going to load up to stop the quarterback reads, say Allen doesn't even play, you've got Dondre Quentin and DeVario and Juwan that have basically one-on-one matchups. And we've seen Quentin Bundridge win one-on-one matchups against Texas a lot. So I think Joel is capable of delivering the ball in that where it needs to be. So I'm really confident about this Saturday. And the other thing, like kind of the X factor about this whole thing, is this complete us against the world mentality.
Yeah.
Like that's
what
that
you're
really
sensing it too.
Yeah, that's really what I'm liking. Like they're circling the wagons and they are I don't care what you have to say about me. I'm here for you. And that attitude is really dangerous for another team if everyone is totally bought into that camp of us against the world.
Especially a team like Texas where you don't know how united that group is.
Right. And that's a team that it has been proven to be able to be divided.
Yeah.
Like if you start picking on one group, whether it's the secondary or the offense or the defensive line or offensive line's giving up sacks or the quarterback's throwing interceptions, whatever, one group is messing up, that they've been proven that they can have a wedge driven in and push them apart.
Yeah.
So I think this Cyclone team has a big us against the world mentality, which is going to keep them fighting, and also keep them fighting is that dumbass from Texas.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Paul Boyette.
Boyette.
Boyette. Like, that's like a towelette. Like, it's like a tiny towel. Like, he's a tiny boy.
It's a moist towelette.
He is a moist
boyette. A lot of time when you go to, like, the wing places, they'll give you a moist towelette.
And it's just a little towel. Like, Boyette is just a little boy, right?
Yeah.
He's just a little boy.
Good stuff. I wanted to ask, I wanted to point one other thing out.
Okay.
And just in fairness to Sam Richardson, I think it's important for people to know how good of a relationship he and Joel Lanning have.
It is.
And how much Sam has done for Joel and how graciously I think Sam has taken this whole deal this year.
Yeah,
and I wanted to point that out.
And I'll second that and add one more to it. The whole thing was going on Monday, and I was texting like friends that I still had in the team to be like, what is it like when what's going on? And they said, you know, a couple things and good, bad, whatever. And then I was like, Sam, and I'm like, knowing what I know about Sam, tell me if I'm right. He is coaching Joel harder than anyone else is coaching Joel. And they were like, 100% absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, he is the same old Sammy. He's leading everybody. He's helping Joel make the right reads. He's helping coach Joel do what the quarterback position needs to do.
Yeah.
Sammy sometimes gets happy feet when he's actually playing the game, but the dude knows so much football.
Yeah.
So you watch it on Saturday. Say Joel throws a great touchdown pass. If the camera falls into the sidelines, number 12 is going to be the first one every time off the field.
Yeah.
Every time.
It'll be something to watch for. Thanks, Jeff.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it. Jeff Woody. I'm Chris Williams. Iowa Clinic Men's Center, iamencenter.com. So long, everybody.